guys, it's Nikki.
And it's Heather.
And we're your host of Murder Shows and Comfy Clothes.
We're just going to jump right into it like that? We never just jump right into it like
okay,
that.
Okay, fine. So we're back.
Finally.
I mean, let's see. I've been sick as a dog for like 2 weeks, so I'm finally back to myself. Maybe it was longer. What was it, 3 weeks ago we were supposed to record? I don't know. We're behind.
I don't know. We were supposed to do a double.
Yeah, we were supposed to do a double thing. I got sick. Didn't work out. Heather decided to move.
And I'm still moving. I swear.
Doing
it's not that. Like I'm young.
I know. She's calling me like, Nikki, I used to be able to do this. Why can't I do this anymore?
48 hours, I would have my house unpacked, decorated, and ready to go. It's been what? 3 weeks?
I guess.
It'll be a month on the 11th.
Already?
Girl, you just hit the microphone.
We got a newbie here.
Yeah.
That was her. So.
Libby. Liv. I'm sorry. Liv.
Liv is here with us. And we're trying to show her the ropes of not shaking her leg, not touching the table, not doing this. We gave her all the don'ts.
Can you say hi?
Hi.
Once we get going, she'll get comfortable.
Right.
It's a learning curve. As we, like you guys know from our last episode, Stacey's not with us on the podcast anymore. I don't want to say not with us anymore. That sounded very, when it was coming out of my mouth, I was like, well, that sounded very morbid. Like, well, Stacey's not with us anymore on the podcast. but, you know, anywho.
I didn't say it. Nikki did it.
But she's, you know, like we said, she's in the background. She's there. She can't go anywhere. She's related to me. Us. So, but this will be officially.
If you single yourself out, just say she's related to you, not us.
Just kidding.
I love you.
This is officially, I think, what, our first one without her, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, bittersweet, but we're here, and we're going to rock the shit out like we always do. Heather, jump into it.
Okay.
Episode 11. Let's see how she does.
We are not experts nor detectives. All information provided in today's episode is public knowledge and personal opinions. They are in no reflection of Loco Network or any affiliated sponsor. We talk murder, have foul mouths, so listener discretion is highly advised.
Woo!
Second time in a row, bitches.
That's right. I'm so proud of you.
I know, right?
I know. It's like, since we did this, your reading skills have improved.
Not really.
Or is it your speaking skills?
It's my speaking because, you know, I still have to, like, focus on how to say affiliated.
Affiliated?
Yeah.
And then what always used to get you, they are. They were always like, they're there, they are, there.
Yeah, there. I used to say there instead of they are. I went to Hazelwood School District, y'all. Sorry.
You know. Oh, man. And this school shit going on. I don't even want to get into that. All this craziness.
Mm-mm.
Y'all kids are out of control. Get your shit together.
Parents need to bust y'all's
asses.
Man,
y'all got, I'm telling you. Y'all, man, our kids know better. Let's just say that. Let's.
I just looked at her and she.
She's got a stink face. She doesn't agree with us.
Because I don't do that. I don't do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know why? Because
she's one of ours. As I said, she knows better. But let's jump in. So as you all know, we're here for all things true crime. Bum, bum, bum. But most importantly, Missouri true crime. And this case today, it really speaks largely to me as to kind of just what makes everything come full circle for me personally. What I found most fascinating, because it's not just the murders or the crimes, it's also all the details, the laws, the fine lines, and all the shit that goes behind it that a lot of us don't know or don't see or don't realize. All of it goes without saying how broken our system truly is on so many different levels. And how different each person's opinion are on just everything, whether it's case by case or the laws or anything like that. So this one was really fun. It was really fun for me because I got to dive into a lot of shit that made me want to go back to school and dig into this stuff and learn how to really understand it. So whether you're here to just listen or in case you followed this case, today should be really fun to discuss. Because Heather and I, we have very, very different views, individual views on all things murder.
No, not at all.
No, you don't think? Just a little.
Kill them
so
all.
Exactly my point. So it'll be fun to hear how this plays out, in my opinion, your opinion, and everything. So let's go. Hey, look at us. It's like we planned that. I'm so proud. Okay, so today we're going to talk about 61-year-old Ernest Lee Johnson, born August 20th, 1960, and February 12th, 19...
And the... I mean, because he wasn't born twice.
It threw me off because, okay, I'm just being honest with y'all. My ADD kicked in, and I was thinking, did we say her name?
Liv.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to start over. Sorry, y'all. My ADD got the best of me right there. So today, we're going to talk about 61-year-old Ernest Lee Johnson, born August 20th, 1960, and the February 12th, 1994 murders of three gas station workers in Columbia, Missouri. There's not a whole lot on Ernest in his early years, except for what came out at trial. Did you really find anything other than what the trial paper said? No.
Honestly, I have to admit, you were so low on this whole thing.
Oh, dear Lord, have mercy.
I read the three articles you sent me. Well, I tried to read the three articles you sent me. The two top ones... That was too much for my little peon brain.
Okay, so I'm gonna break this case down.
I read this
like a G.
Right.
Okay. So anyway, there's not much on Ernest in his early years, except for what came out in trial. Naturally, the state brought out how Johnson had prior drug abuse issues, prior felonies, burglary in 1978, motor vehicle theft in 1979. Robbery in the second degree and attempted burglary in 1981, and then burglary again in 1991.
He likes to steal.
Yeah, so he definitely has a history of burglary.
Right.
Which again stands out for this case and what he did. But again, the logistics is where it gets kind of rocky for me.
Right.
It was also brought out that his mother and siblings also suffered from drug abuse. He suffered from drug abuse as well. They state that he was abandoned by his mother as a child. It's even said that he was physically abused by a man his father left him with for long periods of time during his childhood. It's never really said what type of like man his father actually was, but it just overall doesn't sound like it was a good... raising environment.
Right.
It was also said that he suffered from a head injury around the age of 8 that was never treated by a doctor. And that kind of will later play into, again, the logistics of everything and also the later stages of his life. But they go on to say that he was placed in the special education classes in the early years. And he never actually finished school past the 9th grade.
So did it say, like, what the head injury was?
No, it just said he suffered a head injury that went untreated. But the fact that it was said made me feel like it was pretty extensive, that it matters for the case and
right.
where it kind of spirals to. And I think we'll circle back to that because, like I said, later in line, it kind of talks about something that I really think relates to the head injury and from the past. But now I say all this because, you know, it was fun to dissect, but because for me and you, Heather, the logistics don't scream to you as very cut and dry. Like for you, you know, it's cut and dry. He did it. He killed him.
Right.
That's it. Heather's like, he did it. So I don't care what he did. He must die.
I mean, yeah, pretty much. That's, you know, you kill someone, I think you die. You should die.
See, and that's to me what is, like, kind of fun about it is...
I'm a firm believer in the death penalty.
Yeah. And I am to an extent, but there's... For me, there's the sides of the law where I understand the logistics of it. So that's what I think makes fun, this whole true crime journey fun, is because you got so many people who have so many different views on how it plays out. But I do, I feel like there's so many people like us in the true crime world that can relate to each of our views. So let's dive into the case itself and see if the logistics of the law and the way it played out make any change to your mind. So around 11 a.m. Saturday morning, February 12th, 1994, Ernest Johnson walked into a convenience store in Columbia, Missouri, where he was a frequent customer. He bought a beer and a pack of cigarettes, had a little chat with the girl working. He asked who would be working later that evening. The cashier told him that Mabel Scruggs, is that how you think you say it?
Scruggs.
Yeah. She told him that Mabel would be in that night around 5.
Okay, hold up. 11 a.m. on a Saturday.
Correct.
He bought beer.
Correct.
I don't remember being able to sell alcohol that early in the morning.
Oh, yeah. Only when on Sundays.
Oh, okay. That's right. Sundays afternoon. Okay. Yeah. Because I don't remember doing that when I was at 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I can't say nothing about buying beer at 11 a.m. on a Saturday. Because if anybody knows my other half, we all know. Now, but again, to some that may seem weird, like, you know, why is he asking what time is other people coming? Like, you know, it seems suspicious to other people.
No.
Right.
I worked at 7-Eleven for how long? Me and your sister both, Stacy.
Exactly.
And, you know, people had their favorites, you know, hey, is Stacy going to be in tonight? Hey, is Heather going to be in tonight?
Right.
You know, so, you know, and a lot of times if, you know, say they were asking if I was there, they wouldn't come unless I was working, or they wouldn't come back unless Stacy was working, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, so it's like, for some people, they hear this and they're like, oh, why did he ask who was coming in? And it's like, for other people that, have, you know, like you and people who have worked in this instance, you understand, like, mm-hmm. you have your regulars,
you have your customers, right.
People who, so to me, it wasn't unusual at all that, you know, he asked who was coming in later that night, especially because they said he was a frequent there. You know, right. He was a frequent customer there.
And they don't just come in and get their shit and go. You know, a lot of times they would come in, stand around, bullshit.
Well, and we all know the outs.
Girl, you gotta sit still.
Yeah, you gotta. we all know the outside liquor store lingerer.
Right.
They're always.
Always out there.
You know, they're always out there. They hang around. But the way it seems is he's known to the store. He knows the workers. They know who he is. So it wasn't unusual for him to stop by a few times a day, sometimes buying stuff, sometimes not buying stuff, hanging mm-hmm. around, whatever. I mean, he could have had a freaking good rapport with the person that comes in at night and they bullshit and talk. He ain't got a whole lot to do, so he's hanging out. Whatever.
That's common.
Yeah, it's not uncommon, and that's exactly.
Little old men all meeting at McDonald's or White Castles for coffee in the morning.
Right. So anyway, around 5 o'clock during the shift change, he comes back to the store. He hangs around for a little bit, and then he leaves again. I don't know. Now they say he came back and he just hung around for a little bit. So to me, I don't know if he was going there just to see, because she already told him who was there. But was he coming to see if anybody else was coming in that night, or was he just coming back because he was hanging around?
Right.
So that was kind of weird to me, just to come back and not really.
Yeah, but we don't even know if he bought anything. He could have quite possibly bought a soda or something like that.
Yeah, they say the woman who left at 5, it said that he didn't buy anything. He just came in, he stood around for a minute, and then he left. But it's also said that he, you know, he comes back, he hangs around for whatever. It said after that, around that time frame, he went to his girlfriend's house and he bought a $20 crack rock from his girlfriend's 8-year-old son,
nice.
Rodriguez Grant. So, you know.
Casual crack rock.
Yeah, just, you know, he just went over there and was like, hey, what's up? Let me get that.
Give me some crack.
But it's also said that he asked Grant to lend him a gun that he had traded him for some crack earlier in the week.
Oh, so this is like, you know, a regular occurrence.
Yeah, so he's a frequent flyer.
Right.
To the point to where he's trading objects for crack. But I definitely think it speaks volumes for the son as well, though.
Right.
So I think that says a lot. But he proceeds to leave again and come back. He proceeds to leave with the gun, the crack, whatever. He comes back later and he states that the gun didn't work. So apparently they like fire around in the backyard, according to reports. And then all of a sudden he was off again. He was just gone again. And it also states that he bought more crack as well during that time.
Nice.
So at around 11:45, Johnson is said to be Ernest. I was confused on if I want to call him Ernest or Johnson because I felt like Johnson was a name, but it got confusing to me. Anyway, it said that he was seen returning around 11:45 to his girlfriend's house with blood splatter on his face and clothes. Upon returning, he gave the pistol back to Rodriguez.
Here, I'm done.
Yeah.
You're gonna have it back.
So it said he proceeds to take his clothes off, placing them in a plastic bag, cleaning his shoes, and he gives them to his girlfriend's other son, 16-year-old Antoine Grant, and instructs him to get rid of them. So he comes in. He's all bloody. He's taking his clothes off. He's putting them in the bag, and he tells this 16-year-old kid to get rid of them. Now, if I came to your house in bloody clothes and put them in a trash bag and told you to get rid of them, are you just going to get rid of them for me?
I'd get rid of them.
Ryder! Can we edit that part?
Okay, you know what needs to go to then.
Right, I know which one to go to now.
Yeah, I get rid of them.
Hold up, would you get rid of them for me? You gotta think about that. I'm your mom.
It depends. You're kind of crazier than Nikki is.
You would get rid
Nikki's
of
Nikki's crazy with cause most of the time. You're just crazy.
Ayo.
I ain't going to her. I'm going
See,
to her brother.
I knew.
Yeah, Peyton would ride. No, Peyton would fess up because he has an anxiety that would kill him.
True.
You're all on your own.
That's funny. It's so funny. We were like, oh, we don't edit. It's like, oh, wait, can we edit that out?
So she would get rid of him for you, Nick.
Well, that's good.
Right.
But would you snitch is the real question.
Oh, she wouldn't snitch. I'll tell you right now, she wouldn't snitch. That's she just, don't snitch.
That's family. That's I family. Come. They don't just snitch. That's probably why they did it.
That's my girl. Her brother or her sister would snitch. She's right or die.
Oh, I'm definitely not contacting your sister. I know your sister's snitching on me for sure. Brynn's going to be like, I can't talk to you anymore. Oh, Lord. So anyways, he proceeds to clean his shoes. He gets rid of, he tells Antoine to get rid of the clothes. Him and Rodriguez, however, sit down and sort a large amount of money. And then they go on to hiding it in the air vent. So it was obvious what just happened here. But around 1:12 a.m., police respond to a call to check the store for a disturbance.
So 11:45 to 1 a.m. That's a pretty long gap to be calling on a disturbance.
Mm-hmm. And that's what made me feel like, so did somebody call it in and it took them that long to get there?
Right.
Or
did someone see it happen and like freak out and then be like, all right, I gotta fucking get right and call the cops.
Right. Did somebody feel like they needed to say something after they got rid of clothes? I don't know.
I don't know.
I just feel like there's so many scenarios, but it's very odd that 11:45 is when these people were clearly robbed or whatever, and then 1 o'clock is when the disturbance call is being investigated. So they notice some blood on the front door, and looking through the window, they can see the cash register is open and that the money vault is in the middle of the floor.
Chairs moving.
Like, what is that noise? So they notice that the register is open and the money vault is in the middle of the floor. Upon entering, they find two bodies in the bathroom and another inside the walk-in cooler, as well as two shell casings on the floor.
I find it really weird that the money vault was in the middle of the floor. I mean, like, at 7-Eleven, that fucker could not move that thing.
Couldn't move it, yeah. That is kind of weird.
You would think they would have it. I mean, I just always assumed that it was bolted to the ground. Hell, it may not have been, but it was, like, casinged in.
Yeah. Yeah, it does seem weird, because I wouldn't think that a vault would be portable like
and
that.
And this is in 94, so that was right around the time that I was working at 7-Eleven. And when you put the money in the vault,
you can't get it out. Like,
it don't come.
Only one person usually has the key for the vault, and that's like the owner who's doing the money swap type thing, or a manager.
Yeah, no, we never had a key for it. Like, there was no way of opening it and closing it.
Yeah.
It was all automatic.
Yeah, so that is weird. That is weird. I also think it's weird how some of the stores do it right there. Like, if you go in 7-Eleven and they're doing shift change, you can literally see.
Oh, it's right underneath the cash register.
That's insane to me. Like, why would you not take that to the back room? If you're having shift change, that means one person's there and one person can go to the back room.
Well, and when you go, like, you put your money, back in the day when I was there, you would put your money in these little manila envelopes, write on it how much is there. And I mean, it was a stack of 20s. You would write on there how much was there, and then right there at your waist was the vault that the money went into.
That's just so weird to me.
I mean, but back then, we didn't really think about that, I guess. I don't know. I never thought about it when I had hundreds of dollars, you know, shoving them into a fucking machine on my hip.
Machine on my hip. Oh, Lord. So the victims were 58-year-old Fred Jones, 57-year-old Mabel Scruggs. And a 46-year-old Mary Bratcher, all employees of the store. So all three were employees of the store. Not sure if all three were working at the time. Not sure if they were all three on shift, or maybe they just were gonna go out together and they came, you know. I mean, I really don't know. It doesn't say that all three were working. And the witness originally stated that Mabel was the one coming in. So I'm not sure what Fred and Mary were doing there, but they were all three there and they were all three employees of the store. But this is where I insert, this is where it gets hard to hear. Naturally, you think it's a classic robbery.
So, I'm sorry for interrupting, but the store closed what time?
11.
Yeah, so why would the three of them? That's weird.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they were all three doing there, but the store closed at 11, and then I guess it's when it all unfolded. But naturally, you think it's a classic robbery. Robbery of a store, bullet casings, cash drawer open, safe emptied. Classic robbery case.
Right.
But that's not the case. These people were not just stuck up. They weren't just stuck up and robbed. They were literally robbed and brutally murdered. Each victim died from head injuries consistent with blunt force trauma. So naturally,
being pistol whipped.
I mean,
pistol whipped.
Yeah, pistol whipped. So yeah, naturally you think pistol whip. I mean, that's what I would assume. You know, blunt force trauma. You're being robbed. Naturally, that person probably has a freaking gun.
Right.
So it's naturally where your mind goes, but it's actually worse than that. Police would go on to find a bloody hammer in the store. But Mary Batcher also suffered from at least 10 stab wounds in her left hand. So
why her left hand?
I don't know, but maybe she was trying to defend herself.
Yeah, I guess fighting.
You know, put her hand up or something.
Right.
But to me,
when you put your hands up, you're both up.
Just that, but 10 times? Like, how did
your hand even big enough for 10 times? You know what I mean?
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, if you think to stab somebody.
Right. I mean, fuck, David, you
imagine stabbing
your fucking hand out of like the first or second, not 10.
That's what I'm seeing. Like, imagine stabbing somebody 10 times. Imagine you're stabbing somebody 10 times. How fast you have to be moving. Secondly.
So what did they use to stab her with?
So they found a hammer at the scene, and they found bullet casings at the scene. But there was nothing stabbing wise.
So it's not like they could sit there with it. It's not like they. I mean,
I see you, Kyle.
A hammer. You're
damn it, Kyle.
Fuck off, Kyle. We ain't right today, y'all. So okay, I mean, okay. So like, you know, here I'm doing it. You know, y'all see me doing it upside down, like they would, bam. Then they'd have to wiggle that motherfucker out. Bam. Wiggle it out. Nah, fuck all that.
Yeah, see, and that's what's crazy is, so we have bullet casings, but there's no, they died of blunt force trauma to the head. They didn't die from.
Maybe they shot in the air to scare them.
I mean, they could have, yeah.
Yeah, but they would have said that in the police report that there was bullet holes in the ceiling.
Well, the bullets had to go somewhere, though.
This is America.
And it was 94, and in Columbia, Missouri.
So yeah. But you're right. It could have been, like, fire shots to scare them. But here's the thing where it gets me. They go on to do, obviously, searching of the area. Police go on to find a bloody flathead screwdriver and a pair of gloves, jeans, and a brown jacket in the field next to the store.
So there's the screwdriver in the hand.
Mm-hmm. But 10 times with the screwdriver?
But, hold up, wait.
What shape were the...
It was a flathead. So it was...
Not the star one, the flat one.
Yeah, it was...
Yeah, but did they specify, like, what they thought it was that injured the hand?
It was the screwdriver.
Oh, okay.
Okay, yeah. So hold up. Fuck the screwdriver. Johnson went to his girlfriend's house and took his clothes off and gave them to the 16-year-old. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Get your hands off the microphone.
Sorry, guys. So all the noises you're about to hear is...
I'm not making noises. It's just I'm getting really close to it and I'm breathing into it.
So...
Yeah.
You just said that they found a whole outfit up in the field next door.
Right.
So...
And you know,
I totally fucking missed that.
I did too, and I was literally just about to say, it's funny because we just talked about like theories and stuff before we started doing this, and I completely overlooked this.
I
didn't even think about this.
Okay, so obviously he had a... Okay, just go on because I'm going to fuck up this whole story.
Okay, so they find the bloody...
I just threw the key.
You threw the key?
Yeah, I locked my mouth.
Locked it up, okay. Got it. So they find the gloves, the jeans, the brown jacket. But Fred Jones is said to be the only one that suffered from a gunshot wound to the face, but it was not fatal. It was like a, like it like grazed his face.
Okay.
So
that's one of the gun casings.
Right. So one bullet was, I mean, or.
But still, if it grazed his face, the bullet had to go into something, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I don't think that was the focus because it was clear that's not what they died of. You know, like if.
True.
There was nobody there died of a bullet wound per se. Now, the gloves were found to have hair on them that did match Mabel, as well as the blood matching Mabel and or Fred on them as well. There was hair found on the jacket that matched Fred, as well as blood on the jacket that matched all three victims. So he had a gun. He could have robbed these people at gunpoint, but instead he killed them with a hammer and a screwdriver. Like, make it make sense to me, because I can't. So I have a theory. You have a theory. I don't know if Liv has a theory, but we're gonna hold them like little Tic Tacs. Hold on to them.
I'm fucking confused. I don't know if I have a theory.
Because, so let's hold on to them, because as we go over the case, and I after I kept digging, things got really fishy for me.
That was my stomach.
Was that? Oh my Lord. I heard
Did
that.
Did you hear it?
Okay, so as I kept digging, things kept just seeming off to me. So later that morning, while police were still trying to figure things out, Johnson has now went to the local mall. He's decided to spend some cash. Yeah, red flag. But police naturally end up at his girlfriend's house. They begin to start asking questions.
So do we know why? I mean, why did they... What made them go to the girlfriend's house?
It doesn't really say, but I think it has something to do with...
I think one of them little fuckers called on him.
You think?
Well, you didn't put in here, but I read somewhere that one of them was upstairs, had went upstairs, and they smelled smoke, something burning, so they went downstairs, and he was burning, like, receipts and stuff like that. So I'm wondering if that fucked the kid up.
Maybe. I could be. I mean, okay. It's all theories. They end up back at his girlfriend's house. Somehow they got to him. I don't know if it was the cash that was magically spent right after a robbery. Large amounts of cash being spent at the mall.
It's only $200. That's not a large amount.
No, it didn't say how much he got.
He only spent $200 at the mall.
Yeah, but we're talking 94. And a guy who doesn't have a whole lot of money. It's kind of obvious to see somebody go into a mall and then all of a sudden spend a whole lot of money.
I don't know. Maybe they knew who he was and knew
he Well, he obviously had a record for robbery.
So far, I feel like... I think the reason he didn't kill them with the gun is... I don't know the rest of the case, but so far it doesn't seem like he had the intention to actually go and kill people. So he probably did not have enough bullets. So he probably just used what he had.
Only two, though? That's like going to a gunfight with a knife.
Bro, he's broke.
But, dude, he could have, you know, he shot the... She's onto something because, remember... He had the gun. He got the gun. He took it, went wherever, came back, and said that it wasn't working right.
Yeah.
So then they went out in the yard and shot it. I mean, like, my gun only holds six.
Or something was wrong with it.
Right.
My gun jammed after the second or third.
My magazine only holds six bullets. So, I mean, you know, and I don't know about other guns, but true.
It could have jammed. There could have been something wrong with the gun.
Right.
But...
I mean, he was... trading it for crack, so it's not like he, you know.
Yeah. Okay, so look.
I'm sure they didn't have
a lot to go. We ain't even dug into the court stuff of this.
Okay.
I don't even know where the hell I am. Oh, so they end up back at his
girlfriend's house.
They book at his girlfriend's house. Okay. So they're trying to, naturally he denies it. They're trying to talk to him. He's denying, you know, everything. Eventually he later agrees to go to the police station. He gives conflicting stories about an alibi. They don't believe him. They decide to hold him for a while longer. But at this point, he's become upset. He's become angered. Obviously, they're holding him. He's wanting to leave. He even made the statement, "It took more than one man to do that job."
Ding, ding, ding,
so
ding, ding.
He literally made the statement. So you guys can kind of see where this theory's going. But wait, there's more. So during this time, they've been able to obtain a search warrant for his girlfriend's house. They find a bag of money, coin roll wrappers, partially burned checks, cash register receipts, matching bullets to the ones found at the scene, a black pair of tennis shoes that also match the footprint left at the scene.
So obviously he had more bullets.
Right. Okay. But which leads me back to maybe the gun. Maybe there was something wrong with the gun. So they at this point, they have enough to arrest him. They read him his rights. They arrest him. But this is where they did the good old, you know, cop trip. Walk him through the station, you know, get him to look around and get him talking.
So make them feel like they're not going to actually stay there and that they're on their side.
Yeah, and as they're walking him through the station, he sees Rodriguez Grant in a holding cell.
So both of the kids?
Just the oldest in a holding cell at this point.
Okay.
So they walk him past him, obviously a tactical move from the police.
Right.
He immediately states that boy had nothing to do with this. None of them boys did. When asked about...
None of them boys.
Yeah.
Okay.
When asked how he knew that they weren't involved, he stated, "I know they weren't there." So again, screams red flag, screams fishy. But doing what police do, I'm sure, you know, they got to talking.
Oh, they fucking were there.
They intimidated the boys. I'm sure they threatened them. I mean, yeah, we've all seen the shows, and it ain't too far off. I'm sure they threatened these boys with murder charges. I'm sure they tried to get them to talk, try to throw everything.
Each other.
Yeah.
Oh, well, Rodriguez said
he's
this.
Already talking.
Right, he's talking.
Yeah.
Da, da, da. So you did what?
Right. So they get the boys to agree to plea deals. Rodriguez admits to Johnson asking him for the gun. He admits to helping him sort and stash the money, and even states that in January, Ernest had spoken with him about planning to rob the store by locking employees in the back room, having one of them open the safe, and then robbing the store. So he goes on to basically say that this was premeditated. He had a plan. He followed through with the plan. Meanwhile, Antoine led the police to the park, where he states he was told to hide the pistol, the ammo, the sweatshirt, sweatpants, jacket, 2 stocking caps, and 2 pair of socks.
Okay, did y'all hear 2 stocking caps and 2 pair of socks?
Only 1 sweatshirt and only 1 pants.
The only thing we're missing is another shirt.
Yeah.
Because it was a jacket, pants, and whatever in the field.
So, yeah. So the hair and the blood found on the sweatshirt match Fred Jones and Mabel Scruggs. Hair on 1 of the stocking caps was that of Jones and Johnson. So 1 of the stocking caps. So the other one, it's not talked about, but 2 stocking caps.
So I wonder if the old boy, the 18-year-old, had hair or not.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Ow, I just hit my hand. So in exchange for Rodriguez's statement, the state agreed to recommend, and I put my air quotes on that, recommend a sentence of 10 years for aiding and abetting and helping Ernest. So they recommended a 10-year sentence for Rodriguez. I didn't dig in to see what he actually got, what he was charged with. Antoine, the state agreed not to prosecute him for 2 charges of tampering with evidence committed after Ernest had committed the crimes. So he was getting charged with...
So if he ratted Ernest out, he didn't have to face any time.
Yeah. But what's weird to me is...
Why'd they only
They're prosecuting him for 2 charges of tampering. I didn't dig into it. Aside from that, he was also a minor, so I don't think I would have been able to really
you probably
find...
You wouldn't have got
anything. Yeah, I wouldn't have been able to find anything
oh,
for
shit,
real.
Sorry, guys.
So now here we are. Johnson's being charged with 3 counts of first-degree murder. He was sentenced to death. But here's where all the logistics comes in. And let's just start by saying he was sentenced to death 3 times. So we're talking sentenced to death, overturned, new trial phase, or penalty phase, sentenced to death, new penalty phase, sentenced to death.
Oh, I thought you were saying they sat there and said, okay, we're going to give you 3 sentences to death.
No. Well, he did. They did.
No, I'm saying, you know, when they went to court and say, okay, we're giving you 3 sentences to death today for each count.
They did. But he got that overturned 3 times and then got recharged 3 times with that. So he was charged. Okay, so he was charged with 3 counts of first-degree murder.
Right.
He was charged for each murder. He was found guilty and sentenced to death for each count.
You can only die one time.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, logistics. But those were all overturned, and then he got sentenced again, and then it was overturned, and he got sentenced again. So naturally, first trial, they throw all this shit about his record, the drug use, the mental health. They play all of that.
And mental health shit's bullshit.
And ultimately, he's convicted and sentenced to death. So his first trial. But in 2001, when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that executing the mentally ill was unconstitutionally cruel, Johnson was then granted a new sentencing hearing.
Jesus.
So this is where he got his other hearing. But here's, I really had to put my detective hat on from here, from this point on, and like cipher through this shit and understand all these fancy court words, the logistic bullshit that goes behind it.
I hate hearing, oh, they use their mental health. Motherfucker, I am mentally whatever you want.
Yeah, we're about to dive pretty deep into some of that.
That's retarded. I ain't out killing people. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that word. I ain't out killing people, and I have mental issues.
Yeah. So the logistics behind it, I'm not, you know, we're not legally trained to understand all the mumbo jumbo.
But you're gonna be soon, Lou.
I mean, I'm trying, but I do have some big brain comprehension skills.
They use two big words for me.
Big brain. I really don't understand a lot. Anyway, I could get on a whole rant.
Right.
So, yeah. I start school in, like, 12 days, so I'm trying, baby steps. Anywho, he's given another trial under the circumstances that he suffers from mental health issues. There have been many appeals thrown at this case. We've said previous cases. They never unload the clip at once. The key here is you're looking for things to stick to basically get a new trial. So we're leaving the door open that if one thing doesn't work, there's room for another appeal.
Right.
Naturally, this time around, they're going after the state using the plea deal with the boys. Basically stating that they're not creditable because they're willing to take plea deals to protect themselves. So how credible are they? They're really saying... trying to say that what they're saying isn't holding enough weight. They're just kind of making up stories. Nobody knows. He's saying they weren't involved. They're telling one story. So they're now questioning, is this really even possible? Ultimately, he's found guilty again. The original sentence stands. He goes on again to appeal, stating that the lawyer pointed to him during his trial phase failed to represent him and his rights properly, and that she did not present or file things in a timely manner, nor did she call doctors to the stand to defend him properly. However, it was found that she did not do so. She had a Dr. Sam Parwatakar,
sure,
a licensed psychiatrist, that stated that he could not aid in Johnson's defense in the guilt phase because if called on, he would testify that Johnson did not suffer from mental disease or effect. Now, in order to pursue a defense, the lack of responsibility of a defendant must prove that at the time of the crime, due to the result of mental illness or defect, he was incapable of knowing and appreciating the nature of the wrongdoing of the crime. The doctor believed.
So, unless you're really, really fucked up, they can't.
I can't even think of a case right now.
Like, unless you're.
You didn't understand the severity of.
Right, you know. What you're doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the doctor believed he did not fall into this category and believes that he was aware of his effects of his actions. Now, she also didn't call a Dr. Carol Bernard, who is a psychologist, because she had not completed all the tests that were needed to conclude if Johnson had a learning disability or was considered mentally retarded or suffering from cocaine intoxication on the night of the crime. But also because voluntary cocaine intoxication cannot stand as a defense. You can't use drug abuse as a defense of why you kill somebody.
No, it's not a thing.
But there is...
You know what the fuck you're doing, pretty much, on...
Right, but there is a condition that they later dive into, cocaine intoxication delirium. And they do consider that a mental illness because of the abuse of the cocaine and what it does to your brain later in life. But we'll circle to that. Meanwhile, they're still testing, they're still seeking answers for his mental health status. So from here, he's now represented. So that's the trial phase, basically guilty or not guilty. And now we're moving on to the phasing of the actual sentencing. And he's now represented by a Janice Zelbs, and she becomes the attorney who made the ultimate decisions through his penalty phase, which is ultimately what's going to decide if he gets life or death. First one, she did what she did, but she was just trying to convince them whether he was guilty or not.
Right.
He was found guilty. So now here we are at the penalty phase. Now here's the question of, are you going to get life or death? So here we are. He files that what she failed to do as a lawyer was to build on the previous exams of the doctors that she did not present any testimony of any medical expert who had personally examined Ernest. So they had not personally examined him. They were going off of like what the case was reading. Now this is a big problem because although Dr. Parwatakar concluded at the time of the crime that he didn't suffer from mental disease. He does state that he believes he suffered from cocaine intoxication delirium, which is a mental disorder precipitated by excessive cocaine intake. But it's not a defense when you're looking into the eyes of guilty or not, but it does come into play when you're trying to prove if somebody should face life or death.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Sure. I really wasn't paying attention. I was Googling something right quick. So yeah, go ahead. Girl, it's something that I want to tell you here after we get done reading this.
Okay.
And I just Googled.
So in order for him to face life or death, it could play a big role into what the jury may decide had they been presented by a professional doctor. The doctor was supposed to be a key witness, but his lawyer failed to solidify any agreements with him. She was notified that the doctor had called her and asked to speak to her personally. She did not ask for a recess or a continuance at that time. She took it upon herself to try and pursue the evidence of a licensed psychiatrist, and basically just pled the case to the jury without even bringing a doctor to the stand to say, yes, he suffered from this, or no, he didn't. And by her not doing this, it allows the window of the jury hearing the testimony and the evidence that could have altered their decision with reasonable probability, that most likely would have recommended him life instead of death. A lot of that falls into play. But another thing for the doctors that bothered me was there was another interview with a Dr. Bernard. She personally did an assessment to assess Johnson's intellectual and cognitive functioning.
You're high. If y'all would have seen her eyes when she said that word.
She interviewed him for a total of 8 hours. She reported that after the test had been administered, they had not yet been scored. However, the lawyers did not ever reach back out to her to find out the scores. Had they, she was able to conclude that the IQ testing, however, that he was in the first or second percentile of the borderline mental retarded range, meaning that 98% of those tested perform at a higher level than he does. She suspected that his reading ability was below the sixth grade level. She also
mean he doesn't know right from wrong?
Okay.
No, but when it comes to those tests, they can have correlation, Mom.
But here's where the fine line comes in. You're right. Does it mean that he knows right from wrong? But does it mean that they passed a law? They can't execute somebody who's mentally ill. If he's falling under the category of this then he has a right to serve life in prison instead of death. But what his lawyers did not do, they didn't bring any of these doctors to the stand to testify on his behalf. So this doctor is saying that when she did tests with him, she noted that his reading ability was the sixth grade level. She also noted that the way he reversed letters and words, and he clearly had a learning disability. She concluded that on the night of the crime, he was suffering from cocaine intoxication, and they never brought her in to testify, as well as the doctor, Parwatiker. He called Zelbs. He called Zelbs.
Check off file.
And left her a message to have her call him because he wasn't going to testify until he talked with her and concluded his test results. She never did that. She never called
him
back.
Sounds like he found himself a shitty lawyer.
Yeah, she never called him back. She never. Now, the lawyer now that he has tried to go through all of this again and still has not been able to get anything done. So here we are today, the 4th, and he is set for execution tomorrow.
At 6 p.m.
At 6 p.m. So guys,
hold up. And as of 4 hours ago, you know, they've reached out to Mike Parson, the governor.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. They've reached out to the governor.
For clemency. As of 4 hours ago, he declined it.
So when you guys hear this, you will hear everything we just said, and
he will be
executed the day before you hear this.
At 6 p.m. At Bonterre.
I'm a little disappointed. I'm not going to lie, because I'm not saying what he did was okay, but I do believe that had these doctors been presented at his trial, this man would be serving life and not getting the death penalty. But that's where our differences come in, because at it on the law logistics side, and you look on it the...
Okay, so no, like, I normally look at it as, you know, they killed someone, fuck them, kill them.
Right.
Till I was doing, you know, looking for my comfy facts today.
Okay.
Do you know that it actually cost way more money to execute a person than it does to give them life in prison? So now that makes me lean towards taxpayers are already spending so much fucking money as it is. Fuck the death penalty. Keep the cocksuckers in jail for the rest of their lives. Fuck that 30-year bullshit, you know, for life sentence, blah, blah, blah.
Now, I feel as though, like, killing them is letting them get off easy because they don't really have to suffer with the thought of what they did.
Well, girl, you know, because your stuff, you always come up with that kind of stuff, like the better logic, Mom, you're stupid. This is how it should be.
Yeah, but I think, hold on though. What? In 2000, this is where I said, hold on to that little tic-tac about him as a child. In 2008, he had an operation to remove a tumor on his brain. And when they removed that, they ended up having to remove 20% of his brain tissue that was damaged. So here we are in 2008 with this man having a brain tumor.
He's done killed him.
He grew his whole life, whatever. He had this thing at 8 years old when he had the head injury. Apparently he had multiple head injuries as a kid. But here we are in 2008. And they go in to remove a tumor, but then they have to remove 20% of his brain because it was damaged. And you're going to tell me you couldn't prove this man had a mental issue? You had to remove 20% of his brain due to brain damage that he suffered as a child. So how do you not...
That brain development wasn't there, so he clearly could not, like, you know, tell what is good and what isn't.
His brain was clearly damaged for quite some time and just so happened to be found in 2008 when he's in prison and able to get medical care. It just seems weird to me. It just seems weird that we're going to now say he has a brain tumor. They had to cut out 20% of brain tissue because of damage. And I don't know anybody that's ever dealt with a brain issue or somebody who's had a stroke and has suffered brain issues. It is the most unique mechanism that you would never think. It's insane how it works. So I find it crazy that this man lost 20% of his brain because of damage. And you're going to tell me that between 2008 and him growing as a child/adult, that wasn't deteriorating his brain functions.
Well, I mean, obviously he didn't get medical attention to check any of it. But this is where I'm hung up. And like we all know, I'm for the death penalty. But they took 20% of his brain in 2008. So obviously after 2000, I mean, you know, they already say he wasn't there all the way there in the beginning. But after 2008, obviously he wasn't fucking there.
Right.
Because they took 20% of his brain. Mm-hmm. So here it is 2021. And tomorrow he's getting executed. He's already mentally handicapped.
Correct.
Because of the taking the 20%. Does he even know, like right now, sitting in his cell or wherever the fuck he's sitting, eating dinner in the chow hall, whatever, now that they done eating by now. Does he even know his ass from a hole in the ground?
I don't know.
To even be executing him?
I don't know. See, and that's where I feel like the fine line comes. That's what people, right now, people, well, not right now, but a couple days ago, people were protesting this and going to, you know, Governor Mike Parson and everything because the law states you cannot execute somebody who has a mental illness. He clearly has a mental illness, but what they're fighting to say is he didn't have that mental illness when the crime occurred. But I don't think I agree. I believe he had the mental illness when the crime occurred.
The doctor is even saying that he was, you know, on the borderline of what, mentally retarded or whatever?
Yes.
So, you know, and the lawyers just didn't look it up.
The system failed him.
Yeah, so the system did, you know, fail him. And, I mean, I don't know much about Garvinder
Parson
or Parson or whatever the fuck his name is. Right, exactly. But, I think he knew right from wrong. I'm sorry. I think even if he was, he knew right from wrong. I mean, we have a mentally handicapped cousin. He knows right from wrong.
Mom, it's different for everybody.
But I know that. But I don't.
I know, right? That's what I'm saying. This whole case gives me so many mixed feelings because I feel like I don't want to go hard for somebody like the, you know, like this man who clearly
Out right now in 2008, he had a fucking brain tumor and they took 20% of his fucking brain. Then no, tomorrow at 6 p.m., they should not be killing this man. And Governor Parson or whatever his name is should not have. What's his name? Because I keep on feeling like I'm
Ernest?
Saying the wrong dude. No, the governor guy.
Parson. Yeah.
I really think he should look it over. I mean, but you know who am I? I'm some chick that lives in St. Francis County, so you know, or where the fuck I live now.
And it is, you know, you got the families and stuff that have to go through this, so it's harsh to sit here and feel like I'm advocating for something that these families lost their loved ones. But I don't know.
Right, I mean,
I just feel like it shows how broken our system is.
Exactly.
It truly shows how broken our system is. And that's more so what I think I'm advocating for is the brokenness. of the failure of the lawyers. These lawyers were given to him by the system. So the system...
So they were court-appointed lawyers, so obviously they weren't going to... Yeah. Do their job. I mean, what court appointed? See, I'm going to get my ass in trouble because I talk too much.
It's so hard.
But what court appointed? I mean, have you seen a court appointed lawyer do their job?
Well, and a lot of people. So, real quick before we move on and sign off on this, I don't know how many people know, but a bill was put into, I guess, Congress or whatever. But the Congress announced that they were advancing on the bills to end the federal death penalty. The federal death penalty Abolition Act? I don't know
what it is. No, it's just your eye. Right. You did a while ago.
If I twitch my eye, maybe the water come out.
It's right there. It's abolition.
Okay, there you go. Federal Death Penalty Abolition Act of 2021. It was introduced and referred to the House Judiciary Committee on January 4th of 2021. So they are trying to pass a bill right now that is going to end the federal death penalty.
You and these words, girl. That's judiciary.
You know... I was just now starting school, so I'm about to get smart.
Don't even have me try reading it. I'm always asking her, Libby, what's it say?
I'm only about to get smart. I'm not smart yet. So I think this was very interesting. They're trying to say that, you know, President Trump did all his, he quickly threw 13 executions through the federal prison within 6 months. They're calling it unconstitutionable. They're just saying that it's not fair.
Tiger King, yeah.
They're calling it unjust, racial. They're calling it ineffective just because you can't predict whether you got the case correct or not. But yet you get to choose the life of somebody, which again is hard for me because they chose the life of somebody to take. So it's a fine line that you walk. Eliminating the death penalty will not fix our broken criminal legal system, but it is a significant step towards progress. And that is all I have on this case. So that's where I stand on a very, very mixed ground with it. Do you want to do some closing things or you want to do your comfy fact first?
No, I'm here.
Okay. Let's do a couple closing things. We are doing our Missouri State Pen Tour on the 16th of this month. So if you'd like to jump in on that, there's a few of us going. I can't freaking wait. We get to interview a previous inmate, so that's going to be fun. September 16th, it is bright and early. It is in Jeff City.
At 9 a.m.
But if you want to hop on that, let us know. We're going to, I mean, you know, I got the mom wagon. We'll pile up.
We're taking the Prius. Because I got to drive.
Bitch, it's a Prius.
Bitch, it fits all of us. You know that. And we got to represent. I'm the only one that has our fucking logo on the car. So okay. We're taking the Prius.
Well, then we can fit like one more person.
I mean, we can get y'all in the trunk. It like we did in the hatchbacks.
So that's October 16th. We got, obviously, it's spooky season. Heck yes. This is my time that I thrive. I will be having a Halloween party the 30th. So I expect to see all my peoples there.
Costumes, please.
Yeah, costumes encouraged. And then last but not least, we have our Hunt a Killer Night, November 6th. We are going to do that out at Heather's new property, which is, I feel like, going to be very spooky because we know
Girl, don't even love me.
We know nothing about it and it's massive and
it's spooky there. It's very spooky.
So we're going to do that November 6th. If you want to hop on that, let us know by October 29th. It's going to be booze, bonfire. We're gonna hunt a killer.
Bring you some. Bring some finger food.
Food. I'm gonna make
your own booze.
Buffalo chicken.
I don't know what I'm cooking. I don't cook. I'll probably buy something. But can I tell my story about what I told you earlier? Okay. Not the running outside naked, but the other one.
Sure. But I'm sure they're intrigued now.
No, I ain't going to tell that one. Okay, so this morning I went.
Oh, Lord. Stop banging on the table. Drive me crazy.
Shut up. Okay, so this morning, you know, I'm normally from the county, or I'm from the county, you know, out south. They'll say that I'm from the city, but, you know, hey, whatever they want. You just made a noise. So anyway, so this morning, okay, so I have like the little ghetto, you know, as seen on television screen thingy on my door because we don't have a screen door yet. So I went to go let the dogs out, okay? And there was a grasshopper on the screen. So I went to shoo the grasshopper off of the screen, and the motherfucker jumped on my nose, you guys.
So naturally, they thought somebody was being murdered on the new property of the new people that live there. Because she screamed like a banshee.
And I screamed and called my husband crying. You know, he's a truck driver, so he ain't never home. Called my husband crying, saying I wanted to go back to the county or the city.
I don't want
to
live here no more.
That's exactly what I said. I don't want to live here no more. There's grasshopper got on me. Mm-hmm. And he laughed at me and said that I think that's a little too late. But I ain't never seen so many. I mean, there's praying mantises out there. That they just, like, come on up in your house. Mm-mm. And there was some animal out in the backyard.
Y'all are welcome to bring tents.
Yeah, I ain't sleeping outside.
I ain't sleeping outside.
There was something out in the back making some loud-ass hollering noise. And my son decides he's where Peyton, you know, he was on here last week. He decides he's going to go close the fucking gate at the pasture. Like, that's going to stop a bear or something from coming through. I mean, you know.
Bless his heart. At least he was there.
And then the dog, every night, she's growling. Because I always have the windows open. She's growling and barking. So it's going to be spooky, y'all. But I'll be inside sleeping.
I'm here for it, though.
Y'all can be in your tents.
I'm ready
outside
for a bonfire. And
ooh, we got a lot of wood.
My hoodie, my murder show hoodie, a.k.a. our merchandise. Just saying. So, okay, let's wrap it up. Check us out on our website, www.murdershowsandcomfyclothes.com. We're on Facebook, Murder Shows and Comfy Clothes on Loco. We're going to stay behind the scenes, getting our shit together, figuring out where we're going to be doing our stuff. And Heather's going to give us our comfy fact. And
okay, so I got a couple things.
Okay.
I mean, you know, there's some interesting things that I looked up today. Okay, so death row prisoners typically spend more than a decade waiting for execution.
I could believe that.
Because, you know, they have to have their chance to exhaust all their appeals and all that.
Yep.
They do put inmates, death row inmates, when they go to execution, they make them wear a diaper.
Yeah. I believe that,
when,
too.
You know.
Because when you...
It's going to come out both ends.
Yeah, because when you die... That was one of the things, too, with Ernest. They were saying that since he had the tumor removed, it was... I can't even think of what the proper term was, but the drug that they give for the execution can cause him to have large amounts of seizures that could be very painful for him,
right,
on his way out.
Because, yeah, because, and they tried to make it the to where it's not painful. They don't want it to be painful.
Yeah.
Okay, so you know how I always say I want to go see an execution, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I looked it up, and it really didn't specify if it was a state of Missouri. It just says state laws vary. I couldn't find state of Missouri, but it says more than not, it's the relatives of the victims and relatives of the prisoner and then the warden that are allowed, like, you know, to watch it. A lot of times they do, like, set the funeral for the same day as the execution. So the family members that come in to watch the inmate or whatever executed, they don't have to come twice. So, you know, they do their thing.
And they get it done.
Have a funeral. So they ain't got to come out twice. It says that a lot of times they schedule it for 12:01 so they can have their last, you know, legal appeals. You know, obviously this is not the case on ours, on Johnson, because he's getting, what was it, 6:01 tomorrow?
Yeah.
So. And then my last one.
Man, I was really wondering when we were going to get the news if it was going to happen or not.
I know. My last one, since 2015 to 2020, 10 inmates have been put to death in the state of Missouri, which has costed about $16,000 per execution. Not the, you know, paying for the peels and everything.
So how many?
10. It says the suggest, so that suggests 16, a cost per 16 execution.
16 times 10, how much are we talking?
$160,000. They've spent $160,000 so from just... 215 to 220. Huh. And that's just, you know, the injection, you know, not the, you know, going to court and all that shit.
Right.
So it's costed taxpayers about $16,000 per execution.
More than that.
From 2015 to 2000.
Per,
I mean, to 2020. That's yeah, per, that's just for the, you know, to shoot them up. That's not, you know, to fight the legal shit and all that that we have to pay for.
And then living until.
Right. Hmm. And it is much cheaper for a person to be put on life, to stay in jail for life, and then it is to
be executed.
Cost tens of, it's tens of millions of dollars cheaper. Wow. They're saying. So
that's crazy.
That's like my big old spiel of comfy facts.
Your comfy facts. All right, guys. So we're going to wrap it up. I appreciate you all. We appreciate you all. Check us out.
Yep.
It's getting cold weather time. So we have awesome long sleeve merch, hoodies, beanies. All that fun stuff.
Or you can just wear sleeveless shirts like me.
Yeah, you know, or you can just be Heather and wear a tank top everywhere you go. So, yeah, I guess we're going to be out. We'll see you guys in 2 weeks.
Promise.
Yeah, we'll make it happen. One way or another, we're going to be here. Until then,
stay comfy. Don't get murdered.